This is Mike Elliott, recorded at the Marguerite Bay reunion at Bowness on Windermere by Chris Eldon Lee on the 29th of October 2010. Mike Elliott.
Michael Hugh Elliott, 6th of January 1946, Sheffield.
And you went south as a geologist?
Yes.
To Adelaide in 68?
Yeah.
And Fossil Bluff in 69?
Yes.
What was your first inkling that there might be somewhere called the Antarctic?
Oh, at school. We were taken to see a film called Scotty Antarctic.
With John Mills?
Yeah.
That was a school outing, was it?
Yes, well, at the time, the grammar school and the high school went to the pictures twice a year. And on one occasion it was Scotty Antarctic.
You clearly remember it well, do you?
Oh, yeah.
What impressed you about it?
Well, the story itself, I think. And and a few years later, I actually met people who'd been with Scott, because Sir Raymond Priestley was, he was Vice Chancellor at Birmingham University when we were based at Birmingham.
Who's we? The geology?
Geology and geophysics and botany was there as well.
Yeah. But how did you come to go to the Antarctic? You saw the film which inspired you.
Mm-hmm.
Then what happened next? Did you say, I want to go? Or?
Well, someone from Bath was on the milk run and he came round to our university and sold the idea. I can't remember if it was Bill Sloman or it was Derek Gibbs.
Right.
Yeah. And I had one day an interview with the Antarctic Survey. The next day I had an interview with the National Coal Board Open Cast Executive. And they both offered me a job.
Right.
But, which will you take?
It was a tough decision, was it?
It didn't take very long to make.
No.
But the Antarctic was the call.
And you were already trained as a geologist at that point?
I had to get my degree of sufficient quality to be accepted, which I did okay. So actually finished university on the Friday. I started with Bath on a Monday.
Right.
At Birmingham University with Dr. Ady.
And that'll be June 67?
67, yeah.
Yeah.
I think it was July 67.
So you had 6 months with Bass in Britain before you went south?
No, only about 3 months, because we got our ship in I forget the date we got our ship now. It was October. About October the 23rd or so. Because I was on Vibisco for best part of 5 months.
Why was that? Why did it take you so long?
Because we went to the Falklands first. We had a fortnight serving the airfield site on the Falklands.
Mm-hmm.
We then went down to Halley Bay, or South Georgia, then Halley Bay. Back to Stanley, and the last one down to Deception and Argentine and Adelaide. A couple of weeks in Marguerite Bay catching seals, and finally got to, I was the last person to leave the ship and get to base.
You were the last stop, it was the last bus stop, was it, on the route?
Yeah.
And that was to Adelaide in April?
Yeah.
68?
Yeah.
Yeah. And Were you there? You were at Deception shortly after the eruption. Is that right?
Oh yes.
What do you remember of that visit?
Well, we heard about the eruption when we were still in Port Stanley, and we were first shipped to, first people to land them on New Island, because it had formed a new island inside Telephone Bay. And we spent, about four of us spent 4 days doing a survey of this volcanic island.
What was it like? Was it still warm?
Yes, it was, yes, still steaming. There was still steam coming from a few rolls, which had a little crust of sulphur around them.
Yeah.
But the eruption had finished. It only lasted a few days, apparently. But it was enough to make the all the bases be evacuated.
So the place was deserted when you got there?
Yeah. We went to the Chilean base. I forget what name it is now, but had our midday meal there on the first day we were doing the survey.
So the Chileans were still in residence, were they?
No, they'd gone.
So you helped yourself?
Well, we took our own food with us.
But, oh,
But we just ate in comfort. We swept the base out for them because it was full of ash, full of volcanic ash, and it was quite an interesting few days.
Yeah. So the Chilean base had fared better than the British base?
Yes, it had a couple of windows broken, but that was it.
Hmm. And the island, the new island itself, you actually went there specifically to survey it, is that correct?
Well, we didn't know it was there until we got there.
Oh, I see.
But once we found it, we surveyed it.
Yeah, the way you do.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And that work was published in the I forget what we are now, the memoirs, bulletins or whatever, about 3 years later.
And is the island still there? Has it gone again now?
It had disappeared by the time we came out of Adelaide. Got washed away by the sea.
So it wasn't solid rock then, it was more ash and...
It was ash and tuffa and volcanic bombs and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah. For a geologist, that must have been pretty exciting.
It was, yeah. Yeah, to be the first people to land on a brand new volcanic island.
Were there any surprises when you got there, or was it as you would expect?
Well, never having seen one before.
Yeah. But I mean, were there geological surprises? I mean, or was it?
No, not really.
Your trip was obviously quite a complicated one, but you finally ended up at Adelaide.
Yes.
And were you relieving anybody in particular?
No, I wasn't. That's why it took me so long to get off the ship and onto base.
Have there been a geologist at Adelaide prior to your arrival?
Well, there was one at Stonington, but he was down at Fossil Bluff.
Right. So how did you know what work they wanted you to do when you got there?
Because Dr. Ady sent you a letter full of instructions, 2 pages long, of the work that you were meant to do.
Were these called sealed orders? Was that the name they were given?
I think they were, yeah.
Yeah. So what did you find you had to do when you got there? What was your work programme like?
I was to go to Ablation Point and do a geological survey of ablation on Alexander Island.
And did you get stuck into that straight away?
No, because it took us several months to get from Adelaide down to Fossil Bluff.
Right. That was sledging with dogs, I guess, was it?
Never got flown down. We were lazy.
Right. Tell me a bit more about that.
About the flight?
Well, the whole thing of going down to Ablation Point and setting up the geological survey.
I was with Andy Wager, who was a glaciologist, and Mike Bell, a fellow geologist, and George Kistrook, who's a glaciologist. And the four of us wintered together at Fossil Bluff. Then we went out in, must have been May or June, travelled up to Ablation and started first mapping it and then doing several weeks doing the geology.
And that was using dogs and sledges still in those days?
No, we didn't have any dogs with us. We had the we had a fox track and the muskeg to get up there. Mm. But once Mike, Bell and myself were in Ablation Valley, we just had a man hauling the sledge because we didn't have any transport until the dog teams came down a bit later on.
Mm. Again, were there any surprises in the geology you found down there?
Not really, because it had been visited before for a couple of days in the late 40s, early 50s. But we found lots of ammonites and other fossils, and also previously people like Lawrence Woolley and Ralph Horn and Mike Thompson had done other parts of the geology of George Six Sound. Hmm. So there's nothing really unexpected there.
Why do you think AD sent you down there to do more work then, if a substantial amount of geology had already been completed?
Because nothing had been done at Ablation Point.
Right, okay. Did Ablation Point fit the pattern of the previous work that had been done, or were there new things to be found?
There were one or two new things to be found, but it was generally a continuation of what had been done before.
What sort of new things did you find at Ablation Point?
Well, we found a lot of new fossils, which obviously weren't found at the other places. And we had the massive submarine landslides. I think there's a name for them, but I can't remember what it is now. Mm. But there were masses of of arkosic sandstones, which had been formed from a granitic part of the peninsula.
So what you had to do is collect these and identify them and try and map them, I guess.
Yeah, well, Dr. Adey had been there for one night in 1947 or so, and the BGLE had called him there briefly in 1936, I think it was. But we were the first ones to spend any considerable amount of time there. Mm. Spent about 4 months, 4 or 5 months working in that area.
Was it good work to do?
It was, yes. But we had a break from it because two of the dog teams came and took us up the Snick, up the Grotto Glacier, and back to Fossil Bluff for a few days of recuperation.
You were using Eliasson's at that time, weren't you? Is that right? From Fossil Bluff?
Yes, yeah.
And were they reliable? Or were they living up to their reputation?
They were living up to... yeah, we had... no, we had something else. I forget what they called. Fox tracks we had. They were brand new. And they failed after about 5 miles.
Yeah. So Eliasson's and the Fox tracks. Is that right?
I think the Eliasson's had moved on by the time we got there.
Oh, okay, right. Okay.
But the Fox track, we had to carry out some FIDS mods on it, which Andy and George did. Like make a chimney from the exhaust to melt the snow on the driving gear.
It was self-warming.
Yes, it was. Yeah.
Yeah. I understood you got stranded at one point by a mechanical failure.
Oh yeah, we did. Yeah.
Tell me about that, Mike.
We had travelled up from Fossil Bluff to Relation with the Muskeg, and after we'd camped for one night, we came to start the Brixton Stratton to get some electric into the batteries. But the Brixton Stratton had been buried in drift from the travelling, and the terminals had all got covered in ice. So when we came to turn it on, nothing happened. So we quickly decided we had to walk back to Fossil Bluff.
You just left them, did you?
Yeah, we abandoned the Muskeg and the Mordheims, and walked back pulling a manhole sledge, which took us 3 days to do.
I guess you had tents for camping anyway.
Yeah, we had a tent. In fact, we had two tents. We had a normal pyramid tent and a small pup tent.
Was the weather kind to you on that return trip?
It was, yes, yeah.
That was lucky, I guess.
It wasn't too cold.
Yeah.
And it didn't snow. But it took us about 4 days, 3 or 4 days to do it.
What happened to the machines you left behind?
Well, once we'd been at Fossil Bluff for a while, after getting back, we mounted a rescue expedition with Andy Wager and myself. And motored out with the... I forget which vehicle it was now, but we motored out and dug out the sledge and the Muskeg, got it going again, moved to what we needed to up to a depot at near Ablation Point, then came back to Fossil Bluff, which took about 18 hours to do.
And they were okay after that again? You were able to use them again from then on?
Oh yeah, we... once we'd got ourselves sorted, we travelled back to Ablation Point and did our survey.
Right.
For several weeks.
So you carried on from where you were rudely interrupted?
Yes.
There was a waterfall of sorts at Fossil Bluff, I assume. Did you see it?
Yes, there was. what actually happened was it was a large amount of melt pools around the base area. And one day the ice cracked and it all poured away into the sound. So the surface went down about 8 or 10 feet or so in a few hours. Quite dramatic. And it was one of the, well, the sound was full of milk pools. And these formed quite a sensitive area.
And the temperature was such that it didn't freeze over again, has it? Well, it wasn't a frozen waterfall, it was a water waterfall.
Water waterfall, but the milk pools kept freezing overnight. Mm. At least the surface of them did.
So it was a daytime waterfall?
Yeah.
And then you spent, you wintered there at Fossil Bluff in 69, didn't you?
Yeah.
With George and the others.
Yeah, with George and Mike and Andy Wager.
Tell me about that winter, because you must have been amongst the southernmost human beings on the planet, wouldn't you be?
Well, the Halley Bay was further south of us, but we were the last ones before the pole on that line of longitude.
On the west side, yeah.
Yeah. And we had radio contact with Adelaide and Storrington and Argentine Isles, and we had the occasional schedule with Halley Bay and the South African Borger base people. But otherwise it was a bit remote.
A bit remote. Mm. Yeah. Were you able to carry on with your geological work in the winter?
No, because all the rocks were covered in snow.
But what about the samples you brought into the hut? Did you work on those at all?
Couldn't really do very much because we didn't have any equipment to do anything with. All we did was label them, put them in boxes and wait for them to be taken out.
In the spring?
Well, in following summer, yeah.
Summer, yeah. Mm. Yeah. So your duties in the winter became those of a GA, I suppose, did they? You all mucked in together.
Yeah, we did. And I ran the Met station at Fossil Bluff that winter. And we took in turns to cook we did 2 days cook every 8 days. Which was in turns to do any tidying up that needed doing.
How did you end up being the Met man then? Was there not an official meteorologist at Fossil Bluff?
Not at the time, but what happened was that we were meant to be 4 Met men at Adelaide Island, but 2 of them got marooned at Fossil Bluff.
Right.
So there were only 2 Met men at Adelaide. So about 4 of us got trained up to do the Met.
At Adelaide?
Yeah. And we did the night obs for them. 9 o'clock. No. Perhaps 9 o'clock, midnight, 3 a.m. and 6 a.m. and 9 a.m. before coming back down to the base, because the Met hut at Adelaide was on top of a hill. Mm-hmm. Which had its own separate living hut.
So you were in a separate building altogether, and you stayed there through the night to do the observations rather than travelling back and forth?
Yes.
Kind of an annex, really.
Yeah, we went up to do the midnight ob, making sure all the fires were safely banked up in the base hut. Mm.
Did you take to meteorology?
Oh, I quite enjoyed it, yeah. I haven't really done any since, but It was quite interesting doing it.
Yeah. Okay. Well, let's take it step by step, because we did rather leap ahead to talk about Fossil Bluff. So let's go back to when you were leaving Base F at the Argentine island. That was, again, you're on the ship coming south still, on
yes,
the way to Adelaide.
Yeah.
And then you headed back north again to Stanley.
We went to Argentine, then we called in at Port Lacroix. Then went back up to Deception and Falklands. Then we came back down again via South Georgia and Halley Bay and back to Stanley. Then down from Stanley to Stanley down to Argentina and then Adelaide and Stonington.
So was it normal for the ship to do that kind of zigzag approach? And the only reason why you're the first person to talk about it is because you're the first person who did it, I suppose, that I've met.
Yeah. I don't know about other years, but it was quite normal for the Bisco to go to Marguerite Bay on a couple of separate occasions. Mm. But it depended on ice conditions as to what it actually did.
So the year you were there, the year that you were making this journey in 68, were 67, 68, did the ice conditions change the plan?
They did rather, yeah, because it was really thick ice in Marguerite Bay and we couldn't get in at first. We got delayed a couple of months. And it wasn't until the ice blew out that we could actually get there.
Right. So whilst you were on the ship, were you acting as a kind of a deckhand, or was your main role to help with the relief work when the actual bases were reached?
It was to help with the relief work when the bases.
When you got
shifting
there.
Over cargo and
I imagine there's quite a lot of that, was there?
It was, yeah. And also we were employed in killing seals for the dog food.
How did a young geologist adapt to being a stevedore and a marksman?
Oh, I didn't do any shooting. We were just there to
haul the carcasses.
Yeah, and to empty the innards out and carve them into workable sizes. It's just something we had to do. Just got used to it.
Were you aware before you went that you'd be doing that kind of stuff as well as straight scientific geology?
No.
So it was a surprise, was it?
It was rather, yes. But we just. We just went into it, just accepted it for what it was.
I guess you were all in it together.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. The having to learn to do the met work at Adelaide, that was as a consequence of a plane crash, wasn't it?
It was, yes. I'm just trying to remember the details.
There's a plane, the Pilatus Porter?
Oh, yeah. That crashed on takeoff when it was bringing Graham Smith and Martin Bramwell and Rod. Yeah, Graham Smith and Rod Ledingham were being taken off from the plateau with a dog team. But they crashed and the plane came to grief, so they had to walk down to Fossil Bluff. They spent an involuntary winter there.
Leaving vacancies for meteorologists back at Adelaide.
Yeah, well, the mentally four met men at Adelaide, but two of them were marooned at Fossil Bluff.
Yeah, yeah. How, so, how did you learn about this this plane crash?
On the radio. The pilot was in contact with us as soon as it happened.
And did he ever find out exactly what did go wrong?
I think they did, yeah. I think it one of the skis broke rather on the takeoff run, and it couldn't. As a result, it never got airborne.
It twisted sideways, I think, is that right?
Something like that, yeah.
Yeah. And then they tried to take off without the skis.
They tried to take off, but it didn't work. So the three of them on board had to sledge down to Fossil Bluff.
And the plane was wrecked, wasn't it, as a result?
It was, yeah.
Yeah.
But the following year, the aircraft mechanic, John Walsh, went in and rescued a few items from it, like the engine and any useful bits and pieces from it. But effectively, the porter was written off.
Mm. Do you remember any extreme weather conditions that you were recording at either Adelaide or Fossil Bluff?
Well, at Adelaide, we often had rather excessive winds. And in fact, on one occasion, we were caught out sledging in it on the Fuchs's Ice Piedmont. Where we
tell me about that, Mike.
Our tent was, the sledge and the dogs and the tent were virtually completely buried. It took us several hours the next day to dig it all out. And all we could do was move it about 20 yards in one direction and 2 foot higher onto the new surface. But we were lucky we weren't completely swallowed up.
Was that what you would call a close call?
A closest one. Mm.
Did you have closer ones?
The time I broke through the ice at Halley Bay, I broke through the ice at Adelaide as well.
What, simply walking, you mean, or?
Yeah. At Halley Bay, we were walking back from. We had to walk back from the base back to Abisko and crossing the tide crack at the ice collapsed and I was up to my waist in rather cold water.
Were your feet on the floor?
No, because it was about 80 fathoms deep.
Gosh. Do you remember how you got out? Apart from perhaps quickly.
I managed to scramble out.
When you become submerged like that and you're back on the surface again in sub-zero temperatures, don't you just freeze up?
Well, you do feel cold, but if you keep exercising and get rid of any surplus water and it's not too cold in the air, you soon recover.
Do you? I guess your clothes got dried out on the ship?
Yeah, when we got back to the ship.
Ray Ady was the pioneer, wasn't he, in the theory of plate tectonics, the moving of the continental masses. And I'm wondering whether your work had any bearing or influence on that, or reflected that?
No, not really, because just being at Adelaide, just being at Ablation, it was a fairly straightforward thing. There was no There's nothing really related to plate tectonics here.
And did you do geology at Adelaide as well?
Yeah, I spent a few weeks tapping rocks around the basin on Avian Island.
And were you finding anything of any consequence?
Nothing really. It's just that Avian Island had several different phases of dike intrusions. It was all volcanic tuffs. Because there must have been a volcano fairly close at the time.
And all this was written up when you got back to Birmingham?
Only the Adelaide Point bit was.
Oh yeah, what happened to the Adelaide stuff?
Dr. Ada didn't want me to write it.
Right. Can you remember why?
No, I can't.
Okay. You did some Hallie, you did some building work on the bases there, didn't you?
We did, yes.
What do you remember from that?
Well, we were given the... we had some of the buildings on board for Bisco as cargo, and we offloaded them. They got transported up to base on the muskegs. And then we were put to work actually assembling these two buildings because they're in a kit of parts. And I think Al Smith, who was here this weekend, he was one of the builders at Halley Bay. And we spent 2 or 3 days just helping them out.
Oh, you just 2 or 3 days were you there? You were there for just 2 or 3 days?
Might have been 4 days or so, but it wasn't all that long.
So really you were there to unload?
Yeah.
And load up?
Yeah.
And then get out as fast as possible?
Yes.
So you've been on both the west and the east coast of the peninsula?
Yes.
I understand, some of the FIDs don't seem to really... FIDs seem to prefer the west coast.
Mm-hmm.
Is that how you saw it? There's more to be done and more to appreciate.
There are more bases there. And the scenery is rather more interesting, being mountainous. Whereas at Halley Bay, it's just ice.
Did you show an interest in the wildlife whilst you were in the Antarctic?
Oh, yeah.
What do you remember from that?
Well, on Avian Island, which is just by Adelaide Island, there are several, I think there were 4 separate Adelie penguin colonies. And on Deon Islands, which was about 8 or 10 miles from Adelaide, there's a colony of emperor penguins, which we went to see one day. And there were about 10 or 15 different type of birds at, on Avian Island. We took lots of pictures and collected the penguin eggs for food.
Did you have photographic developing facilities at Adelaide?
Yeah, we did, yeah. Did black and white and ektachrome.
Oh, you did colour as well?
Yeah.
That was probably the first year, was it, that colour was developed in the Antarctic? I'm not quite sure.
I have no idea at all.
Okay, don't worry about that. How was it socially? How did you get on with the other guys at Adelaide and Fossil Bluff?
Oh, we got on more or less okay. There was one character who was long deceased, who was a bit of an idle sod.
Are you going to name him?
No, it'd be unfair because he can't answer his... being long deceased, he can't answer. Can't defend himself.
How did the other guys get round that or cope with it? Did you just give in to it or?
Well, John Collings, who was at base at the time, he was rather forthright in his views, called him a lazy sod, and but we just had to cope with it.
Was he sent to Coventry or excluded from activities?
No, not entirely. Because you can't, in a small base, you can't send someone to Coventry because there's nowhere to call Coventry.
Yeah. Coventry doesn't exist, does it?
No.
Yeah. But apart from that, they were happy bases?
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, at Fossa Bluff, where four of us wintered, the only unhappy person was Mike Bell, because he had to learn to play bridge. he didn't like bridge, and the other three of us did, so he had no choice but to play.
So he suffered in silence on that front, did he?
Yeah.
And did he start winning?
I forget who actually won. We kept the score, a running total during the winter. But, I think he still came bottom of the four.
What other recreational facilities did you have at either Adelaide or Fossa Bluff?
At Fossa Bluff we had skiing and tobogganing and a tape recorder and records. At Adelaide we also had some toboggans for downhill tobogganing. And I suppose you could say we went camping on holidays on Avian.
Mm. What was the tape recorder used for? Were you just playing back tapes or were you recording stuff?
No, we were just playing back tapes.
Of music and that kind of thing?
Yeah.
Yeah. Are we talking cassettes here? Or is this would be before cassettes, wouldn't it? They were just coming in. No, they were there, but by 68, 69, cassettes were in regular use, weren't they?
Yes, they were, yes, yeah.
Yeah, so it would have been...
Yeah, one of our favourites was Petula Clark and Dusty Springfield.
That shows good taste.
Mm.
Did you ever feel... you say you were fairly isolated, particularly at Fossa Bluff. Did you ever feel that you were cut off from the rest of the world? Did it ever get to you?
No, I don't think it did. Because we had contact with South Africans at Borger Base and we had regular schedules with Adelaide and Stonington and Argentine, so we knew we were isolated.
Mm.
But we weren't too bothered about it.
So you didn't really mind the fact that you didn't know what was happening in the rest of the world?
Well, we had the news from World Service.
Oh, you could pick that up, could you?
Yeah. And we heard the Apollo moon landing. They were more isolated than we were.
But George Kistrock said to me once that... the irony was you could hear the Apollo moon landings clearer than you could the messages from Adelaide Island.
Yes, I think we could.
Yeah. So were you following that on the radio, were you there?
Yes, we were, yes. Mm.
That's a strange thing, isn't it, to be so isolated yourself and to have this kind of empathy for the three guys in Apollo 11?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Can you put some words around that?
Not immediately, I can't, no.
All right.
But we were, I think we were more isolated than they were. because they're in constant contact with Apollo Mission Control. Even though they're physically a lot more isolated than we were, but they had worldwide coverage.
They were on. They were further away, but they were on telly every day, weren't they? Every yes. TV in the world.
Yes.
Was showing that.
So we didn't have TV at.
Well, that's my next question. So your memory of that most important moment in mankind's history is very different from most of us, because we all have this visual image of Neil Armstrong stepping onto the moon and those famous words, which you must have heard at Fossil Bluff. But you were having to use your imagination rather than watching pictures.
Oh, yes. Yeah, one big step for a man and one giant leap for mankind, I think he said.
Yeah, something along those lines. Mm. Did you look at the moon at night?
We did when it was visible to us. Yeah. Obviously, it wasn't visible all the time.
Yeah.
We had the southern lights to look at as well.
Oh, tell me about those. The Aurora Australis, yeah?
Yeah. We didn't have them every night, but on the odd occasion we did have them, we would stand outside in pyjamas looking at it, and it would fill half the sky with colour and lights flashing from down the curtains, and it was quite an exciting experience. Didn't happen very often, but when it did happen, it was compulsive viewing.
Even though you were just in your pyjamas? So it can't have been a very long session outdoors.
No, well, we did put our waterproofs on.
Yeah.
Sorry, our windproofs, rather.
Yeah. So you would have been in the hut, and then somebody would have looked out of the window and realise what was going on, I guess.
Yes, and well, it's normally the person who was doing the match who saw them first, because someone went out every 3 hours of the match, of course, anyway.
Yeah. So would they have gone into the Met Obs report?
Yes, they did, yeah.
Yeah. It is spectacular, isn't it? I've only seen a film of it, but it's like nothing else.
Yeah, it was extremely, a really nice experience to see it.
Tell me about coming away again when it was time to leave the Antarctic. What were your feelings? Were you glad to get out, or were you melancholy about it?
I can't honestly remember. Because we knew we had South America to look forward to. Because it had already been decided that we would be allowed to have a South American jolly. I forget the entire circumstances, but Hibisco had too many people on board for its final relief of the northern bases, so they dumped. They got us into the schedule one night and said, if you drop you at Punta Arenas on so and so and pick you up in Montevideo 5 weeks later, who wants to get off? Yes. So we split into groups of twos and threes, and about 18 of us had a 5 week trip in South America.
All paid for by FIDS?
No, we had to pay our own. We were still being paid, but any travel expenses we had to do ourselves.
But it was an opportunity that couldn't be missed, I guess.
Correct, yeah.
And did everybody volunteer?
Yeah, but some people weren't allowed to. Like the doctor wasn't allowed to, because he had to look after the crew on the ship as well. But it ended up with, I think 18 of us got off.
Now, how did you make your way north?
By plane.
Oh, right, so you didn't go overland as such, you...
Well, we travelled by all means, by coach, by train, by plane. It depended on where we wanted to get to.
Mm.
But our ultimate target was the Iguazu Falls.
The where, sorry?
Iguazu Falls, on the border of Brazil and Argentina.
And you got there?
Yeah, we spent about a week there.
What was the attraction? What was so special about going there?
Oh, just the idea of massive waterfalls. And in the jungle as well.
So you went from the frozen waste to the subtropical jungle?
Yes, yeah.
Fairly short time?
Yes.
Was that okay?
Except that we got the runs. Because our bodies were getting rid of the surplus fat that had been stored in the Antarctic, and it all came out in about 4 days or so.
Right. That's obviously etched on your memory, Mike.
Oh, yes.
And then he met up with Ibisco at Montevideo.
Yes.
Yeah.
And came back on Ibisco, and we painted it while we were travelling.
And the geology work you did, looking back on that now, I appreciate it was a small piece of work in a larger body of work, but would you regard it still to be an important thing to have done?
Yes, I think so.
Scientifically?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was filling gaps in the general Antarctic scheme of things.
Did you stay in geology?
In part, yes. Though I became a minerals officer for West Riding County Council. And spent my time overseeing open cast sites and coal mines and sand and gravel and clay quarries and also waste disposal.
Yeah. Of course, we were on the same ship going south again in 2000, weren't we, on the Marguerite Bay reunion?
Yes.
I'm just wondering what your impressions were of the Antarctic 30 years later.
Well, some things hadn't changed at all, but there's a lot less ice about than we'd had. There'd been quite a bit of melting on the in places. But otherwise it was fairly similar.
We didn't get to Fossil Bluff, but we did go past Adelaide Island, didn't we?
Yes, we landed at Adelaide Island. We went into our old base T, which is occupied by the, I can't remember, I think it's the Chileans now.
Had it changed much?
The base itself hadn't, but the all the ice around had. Been a lot of melting.
Mm. How was it for you to go back after 31 years?
Well, it was quite a thrilling experience.
Was there a geologist there?
I don't think there was, no. But we had Lawrence Woolley was there, myself. I think there was another former geologist there as well. So we had an interesting time looking at the old rocks again.
Yeah. Good. Mike, we'll leave it there.
Okay.
We'll leave it there, Mike. I'm very grateful to you. Thank you very much.
Yeah.
Thank you. Well done.